Now we have Ward 1 City Councilor Walter Thibodeau joining us. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning, Dominic. How are you today?
I'm wonderful today. And well, thanks for coming in a little earlier, which is great to have you here. It's always nice to see you anyways.
Well, I feel the same way.
All right. Well, anyways, we got a full array of things to talk about today. First off, if people don't know who you are, why don't you tell people who you are and what's your little background? I know some of the background.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, you know my name already. So,
Robert Hall.
Okay. No, that's another story. I think I've been a resident of Attleboro now for pretty close to 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And grew up in the north end of Seekonk, so I wasn't that far away. And the story I tell every volunteer day when I participate in congratulating the volunteers from the Attleboro area, I know there's always a group from Seekonk who are there, and I'll say to them, I just want everyone to know, where's the Seekonk people? They'll raise their hands, because, you know, folks usually sit together in groups. And I'll say, okay, I want you to know, I grew up in the north end of Seekonk. I was born in Attleboro, I said, but very quickly brought back over the line so no one would know.
To make sure everybody's happy all over the place, right.
Well, anyway, my work life, I was a professional truck driver for a little bit more than 25 years when I was hurt on the job and told by my doctors that I couldn't drive a truck anymore. And I had always been interested in community. I was brought up that way, to be interested in community. Yeah, very patriotic and that kind of stuff. And so I was one of those folks that used to write letters to the editor all the time. And and it was just to express my frustrations at times with the way things were going, because in my mind I had an idealistic perception of what government was like. And of course, everything fell into place and everything worked correctly and well. So anyway, after I got hurt, I had the opportunity now from, instead of just writing letters to the editor and offering constructive criticism from time to time if I didn't understand or if I didn't agree with the way that things were going, I decided that I had a little talk with myself, and I said to myself, you know, it's time to put up or shut up. The only thing that was keeping me previously from getting involved to the point where I would actually run for office was the fact that I didn't have the time to do so.
Right.
But when I found that I wasn't able to work in the profession that I knew, and I was just about right around 50, 48, 50 when I was hurt. And so it was the way I looked at it. I never went to college in fact, I tell people, which is the truth, I made it out of high school by the skin of my teeth because I wasn't never a good student. But I had common sense, and thank God I was blessed with that. So when it came time to make a decision about it, I sat down with my family and we talked about it and explained to them that, you know, if I get in trouble or you get in trouble or, you know, everything is going to be out there in the open. We're not going to have privacy anymore, mm-hmm. that our lives are going to be an open book 24/7. And that if I was going to do it, that I wanted them to understand that so that they would know to help me make a decision whether I should run or not. Because, you know, things happen in life and you just don't
sure,
know.
Right.
Me being hurt was a big eye opener for me. So, in any case, I took the chance. My family agreed. I took the chance and ran. And you know, have you ever had times in your life when you felt as if you were being guided into a certain a particular direction.
A certain path or direction. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, when I entered the race, and I started out as an at-large counselor, which for folks who don't know, that means that I would, any at-large counselor is on the ballot citywide so that every ward in the city has to vote them in. And so that's how I started out. And as I went along through the process, I came to understand that the letters that I had written to the editor, people actually read. Mm-hmm. So my name had some recognition to it. And as I was going through the process, there was one opening in the at-large race. So I had one chance to get in. By the time the election came around, and we had to have a preliminary election that year because we had more candidates than we had spaces to fill. There are five at-large candidate spaces. I think we had 11 or 12 candidates running for those spots.
We're here with Ward 1 City Councilor Walter Thibodeau. You were saying, Walter, about a little bit of background. You were talking about the background. I'm going to continue what you were saying.
Yeah, and I had mentioned it. I had asked you if you thought that there are times in your life you were being guided in a certain direction. So as I had started to say, there was one opening in the at-large race when I entered the race, and by the time the election came around for the general election, there were four vacancies in the at-large race, which is very unusual to have four in any given city race for the at-large seat. So I was lucky enough I came in fifth. Which is, as you all know, if they only have five, well, that means I came in last. But that gave me an opportunity to get my feet wet and to understand that my idealistic thoughts about government, they were totally off base. And if I didn't learn how to work within the system, then I wasn't going to be able to stick around very long. Right. I'd be a one-term council, and that would have been it. So I had to me, I think it was more like the learning curve was more to me like what I perceived college would have been like if I had gone to college, just to catch up to speed with the other counselors who were already there, because there's just so much to learn about everything. You have to learn everything in the city in order to make responsible decisions about the issues that come before you. So that first year was really, really tough. I really had to bear down in order to on doing my homework and just to be on par with the other folks. So that was, I think, was the toughest year of any of the years that I've served in the city.
And now this will be your last year for the city council. And how long now have you been on the council?
This is 9 terms, so this is my 18th year.
Wow. And you've gone back and forth as a Ward 1 counselor and an at-large counselor. And as I said earlier, when you're a ward counselor, you're dealing with the issues in your ward, but somebody could come to you or all the other ward counselors we have and tell them, we got something like I said earlier, if somebody came to you and they're living in Ward 5, like in Jeremy's ward or something like that, you'll probably know exactly what's going on because it'll come through the city council. But if you don't know, you'll find out, through City Hall or you contact Jeremy or whatever it is. And it's the same way when I was talking to Frank Cook recently. Excuse me. He's not only the president, but, Ward 3 counselor has been around for a long time as well. And, some people think, well, he's just the president. He doesn't, he's not aware. He's like the top guy, and everybody's got to know, everybody kind of knows everything. And, Frank is got everything under him. So everybody's looking at each other.
The place to be on Saturday, July 18th is most.
Shut up now.
Anyway.
That girl is persistent.
Boy, I tell you, Emily just keeps talking and talking and talking. Anyway, but anyways, you know, as I said, everybody has got to know, you know, who's coming and who's going. And, of course, from your point of view, you know, you've been doing this for 18 years, and there's a wider range of still problems out there. You've got a lot of things. You've got, you know, yeah, you got good days, you got bad days, you got headaches and everything.
Sure.
And then, of course, the budget from the other night. And now you've got, what is it? Now, have they done any work yet at the Cumberland Engineering down
in the area? I honestly don't know, because even though it's within my ward, it's private property.
Mm-hmm.
So now Doug Semple, the head of the inspection department. Sorry, Doug. I know he has a particular title.
Building inspector, maybe, whatever.
Yeah, no. He's above that. He's like the superintendent of building inspectors because he has a whole team of people.
Well, Ron Straminski used to call him the hockey puck anyway, so he's still called the hockey puck to me. He's a great guy. He really is.
He is a great guy. And he probably embraces that.
Exactly.
But the bottom line is because it's private property and it's been in between the state inspectors and Doug's inspection crew and the police chief and the fire chief, all of the safety personnel in the city, when they make a decision as a legislator, and that's what I am on the city level, there is a line between the legislature of the city and the administration of the city. All the people I mentioned are part of the administration, and there's a line that you don't cross because you don't get involved in administrative issues unless you're invited to get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, I may call any one of those folks and ask, you know, for an update on how things are going, things of that nature. I might bring something to their attention, but I know that I can't go much further than that.
All right. Okay. So we have Ward 1 City Councilor Walter Thibodeau with us until 10 o'clock. All right. We are here with City Councilor Walter Thibodeau talking about an array of different topics. We were talking a little bit about the building that one of these days will come down in the South Attleboro-Pawtucket line there. What was it? The Attleboro, the Cumberland Engineering. Right.
Yeah, Cumberland Engineering that, during its heyday, was a huge employer in the city of Attleboro and, of course, the surrounding Rhode Island communities as well.
The other things that, if you want to go into a little bit of what happened the other night, I know there was you had part of the budget meeting, which didn't really last that long. I thought it was going to be, you know, 10, 11, 30, something like that. But I was even thinking, like, when I was watching it on TV for a while, it didn't go on that long. But kind of update people on what happened this past Tuesday.
Yeah, we had, we had a public hearing previous on some of the revolving accounts and the enterprise funds, the enterprise accounts for water and wastewater, and then we had the general budget. Well, we had that public hearing for the general budget last Tuesday night, and but all the work, other than let's say that we had a bunch of people come up and speak against anything within the budget. At that point in time, we would have held off voting. It would have stayed in committee. It would have been discussed more in committee. And by committee, I mean the three members of the finance committee, the chairman and the two other city councilors that are members of that committee. Although anyone on the council can have input, it's the committee that votes on any of the changes. So as a counselor, if anybody has anything that they want to add or if they have information that they want to discuss during the meetings to make a point of view known to the finance committee, then that's the time when you do it. But it's actually the finance committee that votes it out of their committee to be placed in front of the full council for the council vote. So that's what happened. That was the end result of what happened on Tuesday night, as we voted through the budget, the entire budget, and we also approved the enterprise fund budgets. If I may, I'd like to explain a little bit about what an enterprise fund is, if people don't know. When I was first elected, we had what we called a quasi enterprise fund for both the water department and the wastewater department. And what that meant was, it was still a city, they were still city departments and under the general city budget. What we did maybe 5 or 6 years into my tenure as a counselor is we took those two accounts from being quasi-enterprise accounts into getting legislation passed from the state legislature to allow us to make those two accounts full-blown enterprise accounts. Now, that meant that they run on their own separate budget. It pretty much mirrors the setup of the city budget, which means that they have their own reserve fund, they have their own overlay accounts, they have their own they have their own expenditures within that department. So there are some similarities. The biggest difference is that when the city council votes on either raising the water rates or reducing water or sewer rates, or reducing them, or in this case, this particular year, we didn't change them at all, either one of those rates. At that point, that has to be justified that because it's an enterprise account, it has to stay within the expense of running that account. So it does not prohibit the city from adding to their accounts should there be some kind of a shortfall. Right. However, at the end of the year, unlike any other city department, with the exclusion of the school department, of course, because we're not allowed by law to sweep any funds from them, but because those two accounts are enterprise accounts, whatever money that they have left over, they're allowed to roll over into to help pay for the next fiscal year as it comes up. And that's basically what the school department does. So at the end of the year, the administration can't go around to the water department or the wastewater department and sweep whatever money they have in there into the general fund because it's an enterprise fund. Right. The money cannot go that way. So that holds them to a higher level than because they're separate rates for water and separate rates for wastewater, it holds them to actual costs more so than any other department because they're being charged a separate fee for those services, and the fee needs to match the actual expenses with a contingency of a certain percentage. So that if they have major breakdowns or something like that, say the water department has to go out and replace 20 fire hydrants, well, they have a contingency fund in one of their accounts that they can use that expenditure of those monies to go out and purchase the fire hydrants and replace the fire hydrants where needed. So that's the difference between the general government and the enterprise funds under the guidance and direction of the general government. So, but anyway, that's what went down. And because we hadn't raised any rates either for water, for wastewater, or for trash pickup, or any of those services, I think that's the reason why the meeting didn't go late.
Right.
Is because we didn't have anyone coming in and speaking against what we were doing, we don't get a huge crowd anymore unless there is an issue like that brings people out. And the main reason for that is because we're being streamed live on a computer. We're being telecast live, all of the meetings. Plus, you know, we have reporters there from the newspaper, and there isn't much of anything that we can do anymore with the laws that we have to abide by for open meeting laws and laws of conflict. There's nothing much we can do outside of the public. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It just what I'm saying is it slows government down. Because, like, I'm the chairman of transportation and traffic, but I have two other city councilors who are on that subcommittee with me. And if there are two of us together anywhere at any time, we can't discuss what's going on, because that would two of us would constitute a quorum for a committee meeting. And you know, I don't mind abiding by that, because you really don't decide things that way anyway. Now, years ago, that might have been the way, but you can't do that because you have so many eyes on you all the time. So that's not a bad thing. But what it does is, like I said, it slows the process down. But it also it slows communication down. So the only time that you can talk to another committee member is during a posted meeting, and when everyone else is there. And as I said before, I don't mind doing that. The thing that I get upset about is that the state legislature that passes these laws that we have to follow exempt themselves from it. So they can meet in secret meetings without posting them, without adjourning a regular meeting and saying, we're going into executive session now, and given some kind of reason as to why they're going into executive session. We can't do that. I mean, we can go into executive session, but we just can't go into a secret meeting and exclude everybody and not tell them why. We have rules that we have to follow, just like the laws that we have to follow. How many speakers of the House in Boston, for instance, or how many members of the legislature in Boston, the state legislature, have been brought up on charges of conflict of interest or other crimes that have been committed or alleged crimes that have been committed because they have excluded themselves from the same standards that the rest of us have to meet. And I think that if they stopped doing that, if they did include themselves in those same standards, and I'm not saying that some either senators or state reps don't already abide by that and don't need a law passed in order to abide by it. There are people there with great integrity. However, some folks need to have a law in order not to cross that line. And so that's one of the things that kind of upsets me about the state legislature, that they can pass laws. And you know, because they're located in Boston, every law that's, or just about every law that's passed down to the rest of us in the state of Massachusetts, Boston is exempt. Which I don't know if that's a perk for having that being the state capital. I honestly have never asked the question, probably because I didn't want to know the answer.
the other things that that are important issues to you. We can get into this. Let me just give you just a quick update. This is AM 1320 WARA Attleboro. It's just about 9 o'clock and about a minute before. Traffic and transportation, that committee that you chair, you've been doing that for a while as well. What are some of the guidelines, or what are some of the important issues that you have to face on that committee?
Oh, boy.
It's a mouthful, I know that.
Yeah, it's transportation and traffic in Attleboro is everything but an airport and a water port.
Mm-hmm.
We have interstate highways. We have high-speed rail. We have commuter rail. We have Massachusetts state roadways, such as Route 1, which is exclusive jurisdiction for Mass DOT. We're only allowed to do things on Route 1 if we ask permission and we're given it. We have GATRA for bus service. So between all of the different 123, Route 1, 1A, 118, 152, and all of those state-numbered roads and state roads, because in certain sections you'll see a sign every once in a while that says state road begins here or state road ends here.
Right.
The difference between that kind of section of any state route is that that section is included in the state's jurisdiction. Outside of those areas, it may still be a state-numbered route, but it's within the city's jurisdiction. So at any time, I can be dealing with, for instance, right now I'm dealing with GATRA and RIPTA, believe it or not, over in the South Attleboro MBTA station, having to do with the RIPTA buses coming into Attleboro and actually posting their signs for bus stops and their schedules right on the same post that we have our no parking signs at the top of the signpost, and they're parking their buses now. So I'm working with them along with GATRA and with Bristol Properties, who own Bristol Place Plaza, on trying to find locations where they can have fixed bus routes within the plaza, especially since the opening of the Market Basket.
Yeah. Has RIPTA not been in there before, or have they? Have they been down in that South Attleboro area? Because I know that, you know, they're right there near the Pawtucket line anyways.
I honestly don't know if they've had permission. The way it works in the city of Attleboro is the police chief needs to give fixed route buses permission as to where their locations are going to be for their fixed stops.
Right.
Excuse me. I can tell you that this wasn't done before RIPTA came in and put their signs up and started parking there. And they have been notified, and they supposedly have cut back. But obviously, where they've been parking on Collins Street, which is the, if you're heading southbound on Route 1A, that's also the entrance to the MBTA parking lot and to Bristol Place Plaza. Even though the roadway is split jurisdictions between the city of Attleboro, the MBTA, the DOT, and Bristol Place Plaza.
Right.
So, but I can, you know, all of these different kinds of transportation all fall under the Transportation and Traffic Committee. And luckily in the city, we have a very active Traffic Study Commission. When something comes in where we have to change an ordinance or we have to study a particular issue, that's before the council, I will first refer it to the Traffic Study Commission. And my role as the chairman of Transportation and Traffic with the Traffic Study Commission, as I am not a voting member of that commission, but I go to their meetings and I whatever has come through my committee that I have referred to them, then I give them a presentation on it. And we have either the police chief or representative from the police department there on the chief's behalf. We have the superintendent of public works or representative. Plus we have... those are non-voting members as well, ad hoc members. The superintendent of public works can vote. But the other members, the other six or seven members of the Traffic Study Commission are all volunteers from the city who have some kind of background in transportation or traffic, or they may not. It's kind of up to the discretion of the mayor as to... what candidates' names he sends down. And many times I will actually try to recruit them myself. If I find that someone is a real thorn in my side about this issue or that issue, or once in a while I'll get a phone call and it'll be the same person saying to me, you know, Mr. Thibodeau, there's a problem with this and there's a problem with that, and I've noticed there's another problem over here. I'll keep that in the back of my mind, that if we have an opening on the Traffic Study Commission, I will offer that person an opportunity to do a resume, send it to the mayor, and ask to be placed on the Traffic Study Commission, because if they're interested enough, especially if it's an area that they don't live, but they're interested enough in it to give me some kind of feedback about it, then they may be interested enough to want to join other people who feel the same way they do.
We've got City Councilor Walter Thibodeau in studio with us. Don't forget, coming up this morning, Nancy Young and Julie Hall will be joining Paul Healy coming up at 10 o'clock. They'll be talking a little bit more about some of the items that they're doing and some of the events at the Expo for the Senses, which is coming up in 2 days from now on Saturday. And right now it looks really, really nice on the forecast for that as well. Walt, you were talking a little bit about something near and dear to your heart as well. Mm-hmm. You've got a great story about, you know, we were talking about South Attleboro.
Yeah.
you know, the Market Basket finally opened up after many months of, like, what's going to happen here? You know, finally the Bristol Place is finally getting a lot of people in there again.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a great story. And it's one of these things that you hope it'll happen, but you never expect it to happen. I had a resident call me on something totally different. In the course of our conversation, he said to me, "Oh, by the way, did you hear about Market Basket?" And I said, "No, what about Market Basket?" He said, "Well, he says they're buying the Pitch and Putt Golf Range." He says, "And they're going to make that entire area into their new plaza." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." And he said, "Isn't that great?" He said, "I was talking to the owner the other day, and he has a P&S agreement with them, a purchase and sale agreement, and there was some kind of deposit was put on." So having, when I got off the phone with that resident, I had been working with people who owned the Bristol Place Plaza. And Tony Rando, who passed away within the last 6 months, God bless him, he had owned that property for years, had the Holiday Inn there when that was the location of the Holiday Inn, and then turned it all around. Well, now there's his son Joe and his partner Peter. They had come to me several months before I spoken to this resident. Actually, the former state rep, Steve Carroll, got in touch with me because Steve runs a kind of like a traffic engineering company. And so they had contacted him about changing the internal road network, which is, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, part of that internal road network that they have is under the jurisdiction of MassDOT. So what Steve had called me about is if I would meet with Joe and Peter and talk to them about supporting them changing the footprint of that internal road network so that they could take the former Shores building and demolish that and put in a larger square foot building. Since they had been trying to market that building to another tenant for about 3 or 4 years, and in fact hadn't been able to get anybody who'd take them up on it, so the whole idea of getting changing all of that network and everything, and then going before I believe it was the planning board or ZBA, I forget which it was now. The Zoning Board of Appeals, mm-hmm. is a ZBA, to get an okay to enlarge the building, and so that everything was in line, so that when Joe Now, believe it or not, everybody has conventions. Even big box stores have conventions. So the whole idea was to get all of the paperwork out of the way so they could promote this area as an area that they would build to suit a tenant that would come in if they wanted a larger square foot building. That was all of that information had already been approved by local government. The changes in the roadway had already been approved. Well, me first talking with them, I had signed a document supporting their changes in the local roadway. We had discussed it, and it seemed to make sense to me. So took all that information. All that stuff was done ahead of time. And then Joe went off to the convention. Came back from the convention, didn't have any takers, not a one. So it was after all of that had taken place, when I spoke to the resident about something completely different, and he mentioned it to me about Market Basket, I said to myself, wait a minute. The pitch and putt is surrounded by a neighborhood. I know because we had changed the zoning at the beginning of or off of Newport Avenue. I think all of the zoning, all of the commercial zoning goes in approximately 100, 150 feet, something like that. And most of that predates zoning. Zoning didn't come in until the 50s, so that predates the zoning. So that was grandfathered, but they wanted to extend it. This is when they were putting a restaurant in and a few other things in that same stretch of their parking lot. And they needed to extend the depth of that zoning so that it would include the area of the building where the restaurant was going to go. And we had approved that. But all the rest was still all of the receiving area, if you will, of the driving range, or where all the balls were shot to, that field, that was still all zoned residential. And I'm saying to myself, geez, you know, I think that if Market Basket wants to do what the resident said, that's going to be a tough sell for those residents. And they're going to fight against that, just like the other residents fought against the mall going in. And so that's when I made the call to Peter. And I, as it turns out, it was a holiday weekend. Nobody was there. I sent him an email, and I left a message on his cell phone and telling him what I had heard. And I knew that since they were in the business, they would know who to contact to find out about it and then promote their own space. Well, that happened. And maybe within 2 weeks, I heard back from him. And good news, we're talking to Market Basket. They seem interested. I'll keep you updated as we go along. Okay. Then they finally made an agreement with Market Basket, and I get another email from Peter saying, Walter, guess what? Best deal ever. Not only do they want to locate in our plaza, they're going to come in, demolish the existing building, and they want the end of the building where the bank is, so we have to relocate the bank, and the bank's okay with that. But they're also going to do all of the construction for the rebuilding with their own people. He said, so all we have to do is sit back and collect a check. And then, of course, we went into the Market Basket suspense story where they were doing infighting. And although the store had been built, the shelves were empty, and nothing was happening. So I continued to stay in contact with both Peter and Joe and offered any help that I could, if there was anything I could do at the local level or if there were any of my contacts at the state level, any of the state delegation that I could get in touch with. I even asked Congressman Kennedy if he would come in, or asked his office if he would be willing to come in and try to help negotiate some of the problems that Market Basket was having. And anyway, the bottom line was, eventually, as we know, everything fell into place. And when I was invited to the ribbon cutting, the principal owner, who had come back from being removed from the board, he actually recognized me as being one of the prominent people in the city who had really fought to get them in there and to get things resolved so that they could open Market Basket. And that was the story behind how they even knew about Attleboro. And the funny part about it was is that I don't think the gentleman knew that much about Attleboro, because during the entire presentation of cutting the ribbon, he referred to it as the city of South Attleboro, which made a lot of people in South Attleboro happy. But with the mayor standing right there, he corrected that when he got up to the podium. So it was kind of like an inside joke with folks from South Attleboro that used to be the village of South Attleboro.
Exactly.
But anyway, that's the story on that. It's something that most people don't know about, and if it wasn't for the fact that it's a real good story, because you never know these ideas are going to come from. And if I hadn't followed through, or if I hadn't been involved in the process ahead of time, it wouldn't have clicked with me. But because I was, and I was working with a business that was trying to enlarge, and they were talking, when we were doing all of this stuff in the preliminary talks that they were having with Market Basket, they were talking 200 to 300 jobs, and I think now it's up to 400 jobs. And that's what caught my attention more than anything else, because it was all happening right at the time when the economy had tanked and everyone was looking for work. And to have that many new jobs come into the area, anything I could do to help that was what I was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, and they've been doing really well now since, you know, they've been open now for a bit. Mm-hmm. In the last so many years that you've been doing this now for the city, it seems that, as we've been talking about earlier, that it seems that Attleboro has had a lot of changes here and there, as you know. The skyline is looking better. It's changing. You know, you've got the industrial park going to have, you know, the sports complex down there. You know, you've got in the last 10, 11, 12 years now, you've got Christopher Heights in that area on South Main, where the old Bates and Clink building used to be, where they used to house some of the old caskets from the area, the intermodal. I remember when they were doing the when the Gatra bus station opened up when the governor came down, when Deval Patrick came down last year. A lot of things have been changing. You know, streetscapes is very big. You know, the city council and the mayor, everybody's involved in the streetscapes, especially with brownfields. You know, another thing that's in the Attleboro area, the DPW yard is being removed now and being done.
Yep.
The old APCO Mossberg site. I mean, and that's a big undertaking, and still work is looking really, really well down there.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people don't realize is that the old or existing, if you will, DPW yard is actually a conglomeration of the DPW yard. Part of it is water. Part of it is wastewater. There are vehicles down there, or spaces that are used for storage by forestry, by recreation. So all of those, that's why, because of this move, we've talked about a new garage at the site of the water treatment plant, other locations for storage of certain materials. Although the DPW, it's the DPW highway, and I have to make that distinction, because DPW kind of takes, Department of Public Works kind of takes in both water and wastewater. And that's how all of this started years ago. It used to all be one long time before I ever came on the scene. And so in doing this change, they're separating them again. They're also physically separating the locations from what used to be at the old DPW yard that we know of off of Wall Street. And so now the new DPW highway yard will be on Lamb Street. And it, anybody goes by Lamb Street can see the changes over there. There are new pumps and new tanks that have been put in for gasoline and diesel. You're going to see an influx of police cars in and out of there all the time because now that's going to be the fueling station right. for them and everyone else.
Yeah, they also have the brand new gate that comes up and down when they go in as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a modern facility.
Mm-hmm.
Once they build the actual building, they'll be able to take the equipment that's been stored outside and actually put them inside a building and keep them out of the weather when they don't need to be in the weather. So that'll help the life of the vehicles. That'll help on making them last longer just by keeping them out of the horrific weather that we New Englanders love love to hate. those changes that you see, that all came from an idea that I'm going to mention Steve Carroll's name again, that his company that he has, and I apologize, I don't know the name of it, but as I said earlier, he's in the business of as an advisor for traffic engineering,
mm-hmm.
and it was his idea to come up with along with Mayor Robbins, and I'm sure there were several others that came up with the idea as well, as to take the then MBTA lot and extend that dirt road from where the public works yard ended and run it all the way to Olive Street and then connect the two roadways together with the parking lot. Because what had happened was is that the MBTA lot, the MBTA had become more and more popular. And that affected an awful lot of traffic in the downtown area. And what was happening is when trains would either come in or go out at the different times that they do, it would cause a traffic jam in the downtown area, even if people just wanted to get over to County Street, because there was only one exit that would either put them on Wall Street to County Street or put them on South Main Street to go over the Olive Street Bridge to get to County Street. Or it would put them in the downtown area because they wanted to go to North Main Street.
And pity help if a bridge was out.
Yes.
Like the Olive Street.
Yes. For the time that bridge was out, if we had had that roadway completed mm-hmm. at that point in time, it would have eased a lot of the problems that because people would have or the city would have posted that as a detour
right.
rather than having it go the way that it went. But all of these things, as they began as ideas, then we found out that there was contamination in the area and that would have to be cleaned up. Well, for the city to do that under a city budget is just prohibitive. It costs too much money to do that. And the city by itself cannot just apply for grants and be accepted to receive the grants. So that's where the Redevelopment Authority comes in, the Attleboro Redevelopment, or as we call it, the ARA. It's kind of connected with city government to the extent where it may get some financial support from time to time, but it's not under the guidance or responsibility of the city directly. That's because they're able to go ahead and apply for grants to clean contaminated areas
mm-hmm.
and receive the grants for that cleanup. that doesn't mean that they can't work with other city departments or, say, work with the planning department work with the conservation commission or any of the other venues that are under the umbrella of the city administration. They can still work with them, but their funding source, their main funding source, is applying for and receiving grants in order to follow through with any of the projects that they take on. And as a city by itself, we can't do those things. Right. But a redevelopment authority under that, under the guidance of, or general guidance of the city, can do it. And because they have control of the funds, they get enough. Most every grant has a percentage of administrative funds that are connected with that. If they need them. In our case right now, with the current members of the ARA, they're all volunteers. Former Mayor Robbins and all of the other members of the ARA are all volunteers. They don't receive a penny. Mm-hmm. Whatever administrative monies they are allowed to take from any of the grants that they would receive, they don't take anything from it.
Right.
Everything goes into the projects. I can't commend them enough for the work that they have done since the former ARA executive director and the reformation of what we call the new ARA, although many people probably don't even know that much about the old ARA. Mm. But it was they have accomplished under Mayor Robbins and the other members, and if I start naming them, I know I'll forget someone, and I don't want to do that because they're all vital to the decisions that former Mayor Robbins, or ARA Director, I should say, Robbins makes. And very, very transparent, hold meetings at a time when or at least the majority of the meetings at a time, excuse me, when most anyone who wanted to attend them can attend them, and also come before the city council for times when people, for the people who wouldn't be able to attend those meetings, and they usually give us like quarterly updates on the different projects that mm-hmm. they're working on and at what stage of completion they may be at. So I know I going on a while talking about that, but that's been one entity by itself. The ARA has opened up so many different possibilities for the renovations that you see in the downtown area now, and for future renovations, because their work isn't done yet. They may not be in debt at the moment, right. But that doesn't mean that they're not busy, because mm-hmm. they're always busy working on things that to try to make the city better. Unfortunately, it's never going to be, the downtown Attleboro is never going to be the hub of activity that it used to be in the 50s and the 60s, mm-hmm. and even into the early 70s.
Yeah.
Because all of the factories and all of the businesses, well, not all, many have, some have stayed, but many of the businesses have moved. And so obviously those businesses that were the mainstays or the anchor stores, if you will, as we call it now, mm-hmm. in a shopping center, like the Silmans or the Londons or the Woolworths, as I remember them,
the places, old Sanssouci's that used to be in Attleboro, all those other big stores.
The little fruit stand that used to be,
C. Peters.
Near the archway, mm-hmm. The barbershops, and all of the other things that when the factories were operating fully.
A Park Hotel.
Park Hotel.
I have one of those.
And people would get an hour for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the businesses, excuse me, the factories, didn't have cafeterias. So everyone would punch out at lunchtime. They'd go downtown. They'd grab a bite to eat. They would go to Silman's or go to Floyd's or all of the different businesses that were down there and be back to work, to punch back in again within that hour. And I can even remember, it was Thursday nights that the city used to stay open late because that was payday.
Wednesday.
That was payday in the city of Attleboro for all the factories.
Well, so Wednesdays, the one we it might have been Thursday, but I'm thinking of Wednesday. I'm thinking of the sidewalk sale days and the Wednesday night market.
Oh, the Wednesday night markets, yeah. Well, I'm not sure. I think it was Thursdays, but I could be wrong. And someone will probably call and let us know that I'm wrong. But that's when people would go right from work to the downtown, and they would stay in the downtown. And not only would they shop, but maybe they'd have dinner there and do a lot of the things that, when all of that ended, the leaders in the city at the time would be scratching their heads saying, how do we get people to the downtown again? Like it used to be. Well, unfortunately, I don't think it'll ever be like it was back then. But so what we're seeing now are new opportunities, different opportunities than the city once had. And that has a lot to do with the MBTA, the high-speed rail, and the support businesses for those, the intermodal transportation center that we now have. There's an awful lot of things that connect Attleboro and transportation at the hip, if you will, because we are being a gateway city on the border of another state. There's so many opportunities that we have here for growth, and it's there. Sometimes they're just on the across the state line,
right?
And so the improvements that we've seen in the downtown, and there's more to come, obviously. A lot of, if not most of it, has come through the new opportunities that have been brought to us by being what some people call a bedroom community. And so we don't rely on the businesses as much as we used to. We rely on residences more, and that's why you see these big multi-floor residences opening up in the downtown to be close to the train stations. I think you're going to eventually, you may see the same kind of thing in South Attleboro if there's land available. We were talking earlier about Cumberland Engineering.
Yeah.
That may be a huge housing complex someday because it's so close and close proximity to the train station.
Train station over there, right there, exactly. All right, we are here with meteorologist Jim Corbin. I was going to say, we're here with City Councilor Walter Thibodeau. Jim Corbin's going to join us in just a couple. Unless you want to be a meteorologist, you can take a quick 10-minute course with Jim Corbin, Walt. Boy, you know, I've been here since 5 o'clock this morning, and like that's what, you know, the mind doesn't think what, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway.
That's all right, Dom.
Yeah, I mean, it's everybody's got these days. Everyone's on. Mine's Monday through Friday. The other thing I want to get to is I want to get before we end this program. I know we're going to get you back in here soon. You want to quickly mention about the 4th of July events and fireworks and stuff as well.
We had a meeting yesterday morning because the venue is changing this year, obviously from Haywood Field to what we thought was going to be first was going to be part of Capron Park and then part of the high school and middle school and elementary school area off of Rathbun Willard Drive. Well, that has been amended somewhat, so now all of the fireworks connected activities are going to take place on either the high school property, where the farmers market is going to be located starting this Saturday.
It's O'Connell Field.
In that field, that'll be one of the viewing areas. Another viewing area is one of the ball fields between Brennan Middle School and the high school, and let me just read the schedule for the day for July 4th, because it starts with all the activities we have going on in Attleboro. It starts with Kids for Fun at the Ponson Hewitt complex on Oak Hill Avenue from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Family-oriented games and activities with fantastic prizes, music, and food free of charge. That's run by the Recreation Commission and Dennis Walsh and the Recreation Committee and Department. Then the entertainment at Attleboro High School, the field hockey field by the Attleboro High School archway from 7 to 9, the live performance featuring Strictly Sinatra with Mike Dutra and guests by the renowned Strictly Sinatra Music Group. Coming early and guarantee yourself a good location on the field. So you can be entertained by that group for 2 hours before any of the fireworks connected shooting goes off, if you will.
Is that around, what's that, 5:30, 6 o'clock?
It starts at 7.
7.
Okay. And, but you can get there earlier than that and, you know, camp out a spot and stay there. So that's fine. At 9 p.m., Mayor Dumas will do a welcoming area in a large entertainment stage at the field hockey field, same location as the Strictly Sinatra Music Group is. Then we go with the fireworks display, which should start anywhere, most any time after 9 p.m. Usually if it's dark enough at that time, any lights that are on will be shut off. Same as we did at Haywood Field, right. And then they'll start. Now this year, because of the new venue, there are locations all around the high school, in the neighboring neighborhoods, and maybe even further away than the neighborhoods, where you're going to be able to see almost all of. The fireworks that they're going to shoot up in the sky, and so there may be some people who live on that little section of Thatcher Street that runs parallel to South Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
They may be able to stay in their backyards and watch it. It's going to be great for a lot of people, and there's so much more parking and so much more availability for a good-sized crowd, a bigger crowd to come in and enjoy the fireworks from this venue.
Yeah, especially some of the few houses that live right before Studley School right there as well, right?
That
portion of Rathbun Willard.
Over on Anderson and...
Yep, Anderson Avenue right there.
Over in that area. The parking availability, it'll be available in the main parking lot of the Attleboro High School. That'll be one of the first facilities that'll be open. There'll be parking assistants there to help to guide people to the different locations, because there will be designated areas for handicapped folks. There'll be an area where they're going to have concessions in the main parking lot. Let's see, how can I explain it? Over near the pool area of the high school, and there will be multiple porta-johns over in that area as well, away from the food venues, obviously.
Right, yeah.
But still in the same general area. On-street parking is allowed on all surrounding neighborhood streets in the vicinity of Attleboro High School, unless the police have already cordoned it off. And in any of those areas that's going to happen, there will be advance notice from the committee sent out to those residents, letting them know that their streets are going to be limited to the local residents only as of a certain time. And so if they want to have some friends come over and sit and watch them, you know, plan a cookout, get there early.
Yeah, exactly. Weather permitting, of course.
Yeah, weather. Yeah. Well, yeah, but as you said, the weather sounds, I know it's New England, but the weather right now, the forecast sounds pretty darn good for Saturday
I'm getting ahead of myself.
I'm thinking about this Saturday. Yeah, but so you're right. It's weather permitting. So all of this stuff is weather permitting with very few, if we do have bad weather. Then the same number that we have for the expo this Saturday to call for the weather lines to see if the events are going to be delayed or move to the next day. That will be the same number you can call for the fireworks. But if you do it now, you'll find out about the expo.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. It says, as in previous, I'm reading this, folks, as in previous years' fireworks showings, we urge residents to walk to the venues because there are so many different parking areas. As you know, when it was at Haywood Field, it was a lot of times they would close down all of North Avenue from West Street, and people would park on both sides of North Avenue, or no, they wouldn't because they weren't allowed to. But right. There would be other parking lots along West Street, and they would walk. They would walk up to the field and find a place to put themselves for the evening.
Unless they came a little earlier and parking down by the industrial park in there, because
that's
the park.
That's
way
right.
Back
if
there.
They went earlier before they closed the roadway, then they could do that as well. Food and hydration. Food vendors will be on site to serve food and beverages to guests at the market rate. They will be arranged in the Attleboro High School main parking lot. The weather hotline that I was just telling you about is the same hotline that they're using for this weekend for the expo. And pets. As usual, pets and fireworks don't usually mix too well. So if you have any pets that you may think it will be okay, because I know how this pet reacts, specifically dogs, they're not allowed in the fireworks viewing area.
What if it's
area.
A seeing eye dog? That's a different. That's
yeah, that's
different.
A different thing. Yeah. That's a service dog.
Yeah.
But you know, seriously, if you're going to have a service animal, you should really be further away than close, because it's the animal's sense of hearing is so sensitive that even if they don't misbehave under normal circumstances, unless it's a trained vehicle like you're talking trained animal rather as you're talking
or it's
about,
a trained vehicle
or a trained vehicle then. Then they would be trained so as not to allow loud noises to affect their ability to be a service animal.
We have ward-borne City Councilor Walter Thibodeau in here for about 8 or 9 minutes now, but it's been relatively quick. I mean, it's like an hour and a half has been really.
Yeah,
like,
I know. Well,
we definitely have to get you back in here as soon as possible.
It's kind of tough to condense 18 years. Into
it is.
An hour.
It really is. I mean, I was thinking on the air the other day. I says, you know, it'd be nice to have you in here, like, a few times, a couple of times a month now during, to the end of the year. You were finishing off about some of the activities for the weekend.
Yeah, the last thing that I wanted to mention, the couple of things that I wanted to mention, but on July 5th, the same stage that we will have for the July 4th event will actually be moved from the high school area over to Capron Park in the Flats area, which is the main field over there. And the Army Band will perform from 6:30 to 8:30 on that day. Now, if we do have a rain date, if the fireworks are rained out on the 4th, the only change that would happen is that everything would still happen except the Strictly Sinatra entertainment. They're booked somewhere else for that day, but we would still have the Army Band and all of the events would take place over at the high school on that day. But if any of the folks who are listening, if they've ever been to the different venues where we've had the Navy Band or other bands that have come into the city, they put on a great show. Mm-hmm. It has very, very talented people. Most all of the people who belong to those groups really are, most all of them have their master's degree in music. Mm-hmm. They not only sing, they play instruments, they write music. They're all very, very talented. And believe me, They can entertain most anybody with all of the variety of kinds of music that they play.
Yeah, and of course, Memorial Day morning when I had Carl Bradshaw on here.
Yes,
he was talking about how talented once again this year. I think this winter again, mm-hmm. December. I think the Newport Naval Band, I believe, is going to be coming back to the Bray Auditorium at the high school as well. And my wife and I have seen them since they've been with this in the city. And there's another great event that the people really enjoy as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There's Paul Healy.
Hello, Tom.
Hello there. But the other thing is, before we finish off the program, there's I want to get you back in, and we want to talk about Operation Lifesaver at some point, because that I know you and I know about this is about train safety, about especially around the kids and around the from the Attleboro and anywhere else. One thing that is you've been involved with in a long, long time, mm-hmm. and thank God Attleboro still has the DARE program.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you go back to when Steve Shepard was doing this.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about how important it is. Since Steve started retired, there's a few other police officers that are doing this. How important is drug and alcohol awareness, especially to these fifth and sixth graders out there?
Yeah, we've had Tom Wellman, mm-hmm. and Leo Fontaine, detective, who is now the DARE officer, and he's all... happened after Steve Shepard left, but
who do we have now? Do we have Officer Miller now doing this?
No, Officer Miller. Excuse me. You're right.
In between?
Officer Miller was in between Tom and Leo. So
okay, right.
That's why you get the big bucks, Dominic.
Thank you. That's right. Exactly. See, I even know all the police officers.
Such a deal he made.
Yeah, that's right.
But the importance of the program, many, many years ago when the state decided to cut any funding for the DARE program to the local cities and towns, there were many cities and towns that also discontinued the DARE program. Fortunately for us, under Chief Saburin, Chief Pierce, and now Chief Hegney, and all of the different nonprofit organizations that contribute to the funding of the DARE program, South Attleboro Village Lions, the South Attleboro Lions, the Rotary Club. And I know I'm going to forget some, and I shouldn't have gone down this road. Who else, Dom? Help me.
Well, you said the Lions, yep. The Village Lions. I'm going back to the old. Well, yeah, I'm going back to
the Elks Club,
the Elks.
Attleboro Elks.
I'm trying to think of Pat Allard. What is she? She's on.
She's with she's
the Village Lions.
Yeah.
It's just an array of different organizations that work out with this every single year.
Yeah, and they're the Rotary. They're always there.
And AACS. I know Jim goes
as far as
the Rotary, the president of the Rotary as well.
And AACS is kind enough to video all mm-hmm. of these presentations so that it can be seen by the parents most any time. But the most important thing is the work that's done by whoever the DARE officers are.
Mm.
The work that's done in order to reach kids, and the program is held with fifth graders, and I point that out for the simple reason that when the program first began, it was in the seventh grade. That was too late.
Yeah.
They realized that was too late. They needed to reach the kids at a younger age. So it's held at the middle schools and the fifth graders, and it's very well attended by people such as myself who represent state government, local government. The mayor's usually there, or a representative of the mayor, but that's usually one of the events he makes. The important thing, obviously, is to have that instruction there to teach the kids how to cope with peer pressure, how to turn that peer pressure around so that you know that you have the right to say no when people are trying to pressure you into doing things that your gut really tells you that you don't want to do, or maybe your mom and dad have told you at home that you're not to do that because that's not good for you.
They do. They also try to do with bullying now these days.
They work with the bullying. They work with the internet bullying, which is prevalent now everywhere. A lot of things when the DARE program started, some of the program has changed in order to try to keep up with the times. Now they have, different kinds of things that, like the bath salts, for instance. That Georgia Ross worked really hard to get banned in the city of Attleboro, and the other kind, like Councilor Denley just worked on the other night. We approved an ordinance against the sale of nicotine in those smoking devices.
Those electronic cigarettes.
Cigarettes. So. These are all things that hurt the kids, and they're all part of the DARE program now, because they need to keep up with what the current thing is that kids get into trouble with. And so that's if you can reach the kids, you reach the kids, you reach the parents, and then the parents have to be consistent with that message.
Right.
But. I could say a lot more, but I know we're running out of time.
Yeah, we are running up to the top of the hour. But I want to thank you for coming in a little earlier than normal, and we'll definitely get you in here as soon as possible. We'll look at our schedules and see what we can do, because we do have a bunch of other questions that I have for you, because I want to talk about something else that you and I like. There's the Operation Lifesaver for the kids.
Yes.